Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. When we last spoke with musician Matthew Sweet this past September, he was celebrating the release of his new album, Modern Art, its name perhaps a play on the album's experimental weightiness and Sweet's own interest in pottery. But this year has also been a chance for Sweet to look back, namely to the album that first made him a national name, 1991's Girlfriend. Sweet, whose later work included the terrific 100% Fun and an ongoing partnership with Susanna Hoffs of the Bangles among nearly 20 albums, is touring now, playing Girlfriend in its entirety to mark the album's 20th anniversary. He'll be at the Egg in Albany, New York this Friday night. Matthew Sweet, welcome back to the Roundtable.
Thank you. Great to be here.
How come you think people react to this album the way they are and the way they have?
I get asked that a lot, and I think it's because at the time it stood out because I think it was very personal kind of lyrics to it and feelings that were in it, and I think there was a thing where people could kind of see themselves in the record, like somewhere what they were going through was sort of there, and I think that made people just get really emotionally attached to it, and I think that's why they kind of remember it so well now, as it was just sort of attached to their feelings, you know.
For you at the time, were these love songs very personal?
They were. I think when it became known as being sort of autobiographical, I sort of reacted against that because it wasn't as exactly autobiographical as sort of people thought, you know. Writing songs, you know, you use your feelings and kind of use things you're going through, but I mean, for me, it's still abstracted, you know, it's not an exact thing of what went on, you know. So I think, you know, looking back, it was seemed very autobiographical, but it was probably kind of a mixture of that and not.
And what's the meaning of it now as you're playing it on tour? Forget the live audience part of it, which I'm sure is a factor, but just in your own experience of the songs.
I think for me, I'm really comfortable playing it now because we've been doing it, you know, since last fall. And I kind of like to just sort of lose myself in it a little bit. I can kind of just get deeper into the music and sort of, you know, feel it. It feels real to me still. So regardless of the audience, I've been trying to just have a good time myself. And, you know, it's a lot of work kind of to perform it. It's a lot of singing. Some things are really high and I'm doing them all in the original keys. So it's a bit of a physical accomplishment to kind of get through it all. There's 15 songs on Girlfriend itself, and we play a few other songs. So, but, you know, it's very comfortable for me. It's like an old pair of shoes or something. It doesn't feel foreign to me at all.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you would admit that Girlfriend is kind of a more straightforward record than Modern Art was. And
oh, yeah, absolutely. Modern Art was really an attempt to try to abstract things a little bit. The different parts of Modern Art were kind of like done at different times. Like I used, you know, early kind of stream of consciousness recordings of songwriting ideas and based whole things on them. And you sometimes used the guitar thing that I had on a tape or whatever. I collected a lot of different drums without any music with them from different, mostly Rick Mink, but a couple other people I know. And so those weren't really done with knowledge of what the song was. And Dennis Taylor, who plays all the lead, was also kept really in the dark. You know, he usually played on things without singing. And it was just done in a way to try to skew things to be a little bit different, you know.
Now the faces blur together on the dance floor, push comes to shove.
I didn't want it to be really blatant, you know, so I think in some sense you listen to the record, it's probably a lot more normal than I'm making it sound, you know?
Oh, definitely, but it's different than this straightforward power pop that first kind of put Girlfriend on the map, for sure.
Well, I mean, I agree. I think you're right. And I've done, you know, records with all kinds of different sort of angles. But when you're one guy and you're a solo person, it's kind of hard to be anything but yourself. And maybe that's why Girlfriend songs feel so comfortable to me now. It's probably good that I play them a lot. Maybe it'll influence me to do something accessible.
Are you writing on the road now?
Not much. I'll probably be doing it at home. We're working on an 80s record with Susanna and I, an 80s covers record, and probably when we get done with that, which will be by this fall, I'll start working on something new of my own. We're also continuing to tour Girlfriend, and we're going to the Midwest in September, and that's kind of building, even though we've already been there. So we're kind of on our second trip to the Northeast and our second trip to the Midwest, and we did the West Coast this year and went to Japan and played it a couple times. So there's been more than I realized there would be. There just is a lot of demand for it.
I once read that you didn't like flying so much at the height of maybe that mid-90s era. Is that still true?
Yeah, that's true. I stopped flying altogether in, I believe, 1994. And I did a whole ton of crazy driving, you know, like driving overnight 2 days to do some MTV thing in New York, or, you know, once I was in L.A., and it was difficult. I had just terrible, terrible fear of flying. It was like manifested itself as the worst thing in my life at that time. So my manager worked it out. I didn't have to fly for a while, and that just kind of stuck. I only went abroad one time when I took the QE2 to England, which was extremely frightening for me still. And eventually I went through I wanted to start flying again because I was getting offered things I couldn't do if I didn't. And the first time I flew after, I believe, 8 years, I flew to New York to do this Brian Wilson tribute at Radio City. And it was such a big deal to me to be asked to do this thing as a tribute to Brian. A lot of amazing people were on it. And so I was like, okay, I'll go to do that. But it turned out I was able to drive to New York after a tour. So then I flew home, which was a huge deal. And then the next week they said, we want you to fly back to New York. And it was because we got a Letterman show with Brian where Darius Rucker and I were going to sing our Sail on Sailor version and then do Good Vibrations with Brian and his band. So they said, we'll put you in first class with Brian and everybody. And so I was like, this is awesome, because if it goes down, I'll be like the big bopper or something.
With a lot more hits.
I have to pick the one with the least talent. I'm sure he was great. Anyway, they were all so nice to me. His daughters were all there and super nice. Everybody knew I was just horribly afraid of flying. So everybody in his band were so nice, and everybody kind of helped me through it. And then later that summer, I went to Japan for the first time in, you know, 9 or 10 years, and that was awesome. And since then, I went through some classes with a pilot, was sort of hypnotized some about it. That helped a lot, and I flew during the thorns thing. But ultimately, getting treated for, I suffer from bipolar disorder that's, you know, in my family. And once I got treated for that, my fear of flying just kind of totally went away. And now I'm just fine with it, which is unbelievable, because I thought there was no way I would ever be okay with it.
Huh. You mentioned Brian Wilson. Of course, the Beach Boys were a huge influence on you and are. I had to ask you, they're on a 50th anniversary tour. They have a new CD out. Can you see yourself doing Girlfriend in 2042 or whatever?
Oh, I only wish I could. You know, I don't really have that. The bass the Beach Boys had, I could be, you know, mini micro Beach Boys thing in 50 years of my own. But you know what? That's very much on my radar. A lot of our friends are in Brian's band and in Mike's band. And so when they got together this year, we were really excited. Our lead guitar player, Dennis, and I, and Rick Mink, our drummer, all went down maybe 3 weeks ago to Indio, which is right by Palm Springs. And we got to go, you know, the VIP sound check thing, and we got our photo taken with all of the, you know, current remaining Beach Boys. And our friend John Calfill's playing drums, you know, and he was amazing. He's married to Vicki Peterson, so I know him, you know, through the Bangles and Susanna and everybody. Mm-hmm. And he's just one of my favorite people, so that was awesome to see. He looks like Animal. And they were awesome. Brian looked happier and more relaxed than I've seen him maybe ever. Even in the photo we took at the soundcheck party thing, he looks really relaxed, you know, sitting with the guys. So it's pretty, Brian, I think it's been great for, and he did a lot of really good singing on it. Jeffrey Foskett is a dear friend of mine who is kind of Brian's right-hand guy, and he sings all the really high stuff for the live shows of the Beach Boys and is just so amazing. And they have him in kind of the front lineup with the guys in the band, and I think the guy who's the sort of musical director also is up with them. But the whole back line is all these people we know from Brian's, you know, Pet Sounds and Smile shows and everything.
If they asked you to go out with them and, you know, do some background vocals, would you do it?
I would. You know, it's funny because once, way back, I kind of got asked if I would do that. It must have been in kind of the late 90s. And I know, like, they had Christopher Cross doing it and several different people that were singing things. I think I just was, either too busy or they ended up not really wanting me to do it. I can't really exactly remember, but I would absolutely do whatever for Brian or the Beach Boys because they just loom so large in my world. And, you know, to have been able to meet Brian and be around him a few times in a personal situation is just, you know, one of the greatest things of my life. And he's always been really nice to me. He came and listened in the studio one night when we were working on In Reverse, my record from 1999, and got really excited about some of the Wall of Sound stuff we tried to do, like Spectre on it, and was just really supportive. And you know, he's not often real open or, you know, sharing a lot of emotions with people. He's pretty withdrawn. So I feel like it's, you know, amazing that I've gotten to be around him. One time we were in New York rehearsing for the tribute thing, and everybody broke for a break for food or something, and Brian was sitting alone at his little keyboard, and I was still in the room getting my stuff together, and he was playing this incredible-sounding kind of melancholy thing on the piano. And I was like, Brian, that is so beautiful. What is it? He goes, I know. It's Blueberry Hill. And it was like, you would never have known that that's what it was, but it was just this gorgeous, heartbreaking thing he was playing. But, you know, those little moments really, you know, they're among the high points of my life. I never met a Beatle, so Brian's my guy.
Huh. Well, you've mentioned your partnership with Susanna Hoffs a couple times and that the next album will be the 80s. Do you go up from there and do the 90s, or after that will you've done 60s and 70s, go backwards and do Chantilly Lace, since you're clearly a big fan?
Great. She and I could get a lot of great stuff from the 50s. That's a pretty good idea. I don't really know. I mean, right now we're just trying to do the 80s, so I guess we'll get an idea maybe once we're done, if we do some touring and if people seem really into it, maybe we really ought to do 50s and 40s, because that'd be pretty cool.
Well, everyone has the standards album, eventually.
That's true, but I think we would pick things that were more offbeat, you know?
Well, sure. So what are you doing in the 80s?
You know, 80s was when I was actually a teenager. I graduated high school in 83. So a lot of the records I bought as a teenager fall either in the late 70s or early 80s. And so there's a lot of kind of more indie pop stuff, like the DBs and REM. And we're doing we did a bongo song. There's XTC and Squeeze and the Smiths and, you know, things like that. So it's a lot of things. I liked the record when I was a kid, but also, you know, stuff Sue liked from that era, which tends to be a little more well-known songs because she was sort of touring during that time, and the things she remembers from the 80s are kind of what she heard, you know, running around, and they were so busy. You know, it's like me in the early, you know, once it was 92, I don't know anything about any modern record since then, you know.
In that era, when Girlfriend did come out and become big, it was a different time for music and the music industry. I mean, think about how much has changed. iPods, you know, you could have your MySpace page or whatever. You really broke out through radio. MTV was a help, I think. Have you thought about how the scene has changed in these intervening 20 years?
Of course, you know, I mean, it's been really the slow destruction of kind of what we knew as the record business. Everybody saw it coming, I think, you know, maybe a dozen years ago. I think maybe we thought it was going to happen sort of faster than it did. Instead, it's been this long decline. I think the last thing I read, which maybe was a year ago, said that it's 85% less records in total that sell now than sold before the internet. So just the audience for actually buying records as we knew them, you know, has really changed. And there's just, with the internet, there's so much. There's so many things to take your attention. I think music is definitely a part of it for young people. And I think there's probably a very, I mean, I know there's a very vibrant kind of indie scene, but I think it's just harder for people because the labels aren't there to spend a bunch of money because they kind of can't make the money, you know, back. And so everything is a little more independent. And I like that because it leaves me feeling free about music and not having to be hung up about anybody's expectations, you know.
We've been speaking with Matthew Sweet. He'll be at the Egg in Albany this Friday night playing Girlfriend in its entirety, and I'm hoping some other songs. I'm sure he will. Matthew Sweet's most recent album is Modern Art. It's been a pleasure to have you back on the roundtable, and I appreciate you coming on. I'll be seeing you Friday and the Beach Boys Saturday, so it's going to be a fun weekend.
I'm so excited you're seeing the Beach Boys. I mean, literally, we were so excited for like 5 days afterwards. We all just kept calling each other and going, God, it was so amazing. It just was a great evening, and to see them and their fans. I think there were about 5,000 people there, and people care and love their care about and love their songs so much, as do we. So I think you're in for a real treat with that.
Don't be too modest about Friday. I'm looking forward to that too.
Me too. It'll be great. And I've heard everybody says the Egg is really cool, so all right.
I think you guys are going to be on the louder end of it.
We probably will. We're usually quite loud. Not loud like we used to be.
Well, Matthew Sweet, thank you so much for joining us on the roundtable. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. We'll see you Friday.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.